Welcome to another series and another episode of the Cambridge Endurance Sports Podcast. We kick off this series with another chat with Dom Halbert, this time joined by his wife Christina, and we're talking about all things ultra, in particular the backyard ultra format. We go into the mental strengths and indeed the physical ones that are required to do an event of this sort, and what the crew gets up to and all the things that surround being part of this friendly and welcoming scene, which is the ultra community. Whether you're a skeptic like me, or whether you're an experienced ultra runner, or just thinking of dipping your toe in it, hopefully this talk will be of great interest to you. It's a friendly chat. There's a lot of elements to it. Have a listen, sit back or head out for that extra mile and enjoy as we ask if to do a backyard, you really have to be backyard loopy. Dom Halbert in his house this time. Last time we met, it was in my garden, but we're in his living room now, complete with his dog.
Panting Lexi.
and his wife is not panting, but she's called Christina. So you'll get used to my humour. So we're catching up with him again because since we last spoke about his journey into ultra and how he went from just running home from the station to becoming a regular ultra runner, he's moved on. And I want to start with something that you actually said to me the other day. You said, even though I'm not as fit as I was last year, I did the Suffolk Backyard Ultra and actually did 50% more than the last time. And in fact, you managed 30 laps, which it must be about 125 miles. That's a long way to go. We'll probably remind you as we go along of what a backyard ultra actually consists of, but I just want to pick up on that. What is it that's changed that's made you able now to do 125 miles instead of two-thirds of that, which is what you did last time? What's been going on?
I think a lot of it comes down to experience and just the fact I've done five backyards now. So experience of training build up and nutrition and just the actual event itself and kind of mentally knowing, right, well, I know what I'm capable of and know in theory, like when I start, that it could go on for a long time. Whereas early days, you don't really know what to expect.
Yeah. I think we'll pick up on each of those things as we go along. So the event itself is getting more popular, isn't it? And this is another reason why we're having this chat. It just seems to me that everybody's talking about ultra again. I mean, when we did the first one, it was getting popular.
Yeah.
But, you know, you've got ex-champion triathletes doing ultra runs, ultra bike, people doing adventures and this backyard thing as well. So tell us a bit about the participation rates now and what you see happening in the ultra world, particularly in Britain. I know you go to America as well, but how do you think it's moving?
Yeah, so it's probably boomed, I'd say, just before COVID initially. Right. But events, typically, there was one or two in the UK up until a few years ago. And now you've got, there's probably about four or five main ones in the UK, and then there's still probably another half dozen smaller ones which have popped up in the last few years.
These are backyards.
Backyard ultras, the UK. One of them this year we did in March as well, the Rasselbach one. That's the first one they did this year, and for next year that sold out already. It sold out within, I think, about 2 weeks. Yeah. So that's got, oh, I don't know, actually, was that about 200 people? Maybe about 200 people doing that.
Yeah.
Right.
Suffolk, you get, I think it's 250 is the capacity. Obviously, with dropouts, you're talking about 200 that sign up to that. I think that will sell out for next year as well.
And are they new faces or people moving up or just going further, or that you've seen around? Are you seeing a lot of new faces appear then?
Yeah, there's lots of new faces there, and lots of the old faces you meet from previous years typically will come back as well. Because I think they're kind of, it's quite an easy format to get addicted to. And there's a lot of people I've seen there that I literally will see only at backyards and just have a good few days just catching up, running around in circles.
Yeah. Well, this is it. I mean, this is the what I don't get about it is that it's so repetitive. And what do you think it's actually testing? I mean, you're going round a loop, yeah? And you told me as well that it's not the fastest runner who wins.
No.
Usually. So I asked you to, out of the 200 and whatever that were there, if they had a 10K race, it wouldn't be the same winner for that as it was for the ultra.
No, no chance.
So what qualities do you think the backyard ultra in particular, with this format of doing the 4 and a bit mile loop on the hour every hour, what is it, what qualities does that bring out more than anything else, do you think?
You need to be mentally tough, for sure. I think that's more important than your physical fitness. You've got to have a certain degree of physical fitness, but ultimately, if you're mentally stronger, you'll go further than someone that's maybe slightly physically fitter than you are, in my opinion.
Yeah, so this mental strength, I really want to get into this. So you obviously must think, or you are mentally stronger now than you were.
Than I was a couple of years ago, for sure.
Yeah. So how do you, what does that actually mean? How do you train that, and what is the mental strength? Is it just being able to cope with suffering? Is it knowing you don't have to stop? Is it overriding your body? What is it?
That's a good question. Because I don't really know. I couldn't put my finger on exactly what it is. A certain degree of it, for sure, would be the experience of having done it before and knowing what it's like to, say, run for 20-odd hours. Knowing you've done it before helps you a lot mentally to go, okay, I've already gone that far. I know to prepare to go. No, I want to try and go further this time, but I've already gone that far before. So you're kind of already prepared. It's not like an unknown. It's not like, oh, you know, God, I've got to go and run. Like, the thought for me, running a marathon, like racing a marathon now, I couldn't bear the thought of doing it, to be honest with you. But the thought of doing a 24-hour backyard is more like a social as well.
Is that because it's broken up or because it's less intense?
I think less intense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's something that appeals to a lot of people, the idea that you don't have to have that intense suffering, and you're not pushing that limit, you're pushing other limits.
Exactly, it's a completely different muscle set and mindset, really. And the suffering kind of comes when you're a couple of hours from being done.
And yet, you told me you had a crisis after just a few laps, didn't you?
Yeah.
So what happened there? Talk us through it.
I think for a lot of ultra runners in general, and for backyard runners, you've got to have like a purpose or a why, as they call it, for why you're doing the race. Yep. And I was about 5 or 6 hours in, and to be honest, I couldn't really be bothered. I don't know why I'm doing this. And the thought of doing, to try and reach my goal, the thought of carrying on doing it for another 20 hours on top of that, I thought, what's the point? I can just chill in camp and have fun with the other crew and people around there. Physically, I felt okay, but I thought, I don't really know if I want to be doing this. And then luckily, one of the other runners, Rachel, who, you know, kind of talked me around and said, if roles were reversed, what would you be saying to me? And then I soon snapped out of it and went, yeah, okay.
So you were actually on the point of not getting up for the next one?
It wasn't about getting up. It was just when I was out on the loop.
Okay.
I just thought, I don't really have the motivation for this.
And you were saying this to the ones, people around you?
Yeah, just to Rachel at the time, yeah. I think it was Rachel and Nigel. It was just the three of us. And I just thought, I don't really know if I'm feeling it. But then again, that's an experience factor, because if it was one of my first, I may well have just stopped. But as I've done a few, I know that emotions go up and down all the time. So I thought, just stick at it for another couple of hours and it'll be fine. And sure enough, it was.
Yeah.
And for the most part, I think I was buzzing most of the way around. I was pretty focused this year. I think Christina will probably agree to that. I had it set in my mind exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to try and get in to give myself a good 10 to 15 minutes rest every hour. That seemed to work. I seemed to eat and drink reasonably well. Recover quite well.
Yeah, no. So you had a good strategy in place. Was that all planned, or does that go with your moods? Like the new, let's start with the nutrition, because I want to talk about the various things. But yeah, so nutrition strategy. Did you go there armed with, you know, 48 hours worth of supplies, or what? How did you approach it?
Yeah, I don't get me wrong. Like, I didn't expect to go for 48 hours, but no. I thought, again, something that people said to me before, you need to be prepared to go far. Because if you kind of just prepare 24 hours worth of food, you're kind of mentally quitting there already. Like, you hear some stories of people that book a hotel already for the Sunday night of a backyard, and you think, well, you're already giving yourself a limit.
Yeah.
So with food, you kind of cooked, I think, about 4 or 5 pizzas the night before.
Right.
Bagged them up, got some cold coffee cans, cherry coke, okay. Which cherry coke's just, that's a dream for me. An appetizer this year as well, in the heat particularly. Just fueling up on all the good stuff like that.
Any other sort of comedy things that you see people eating?
Blue WKD.
Oh yeah, Andrew Smith. Oh. Yeah, he's. I think he won one of the early stuff at Backyards a few years ago, and he's partial to a Blue WKD on a run.
And yeah. Someone didn't give it to him. One of the loops.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we won't mention Golden Trousers.
Yeah, we will. Obviously, so that's Christina. You can hear. So Christina, you were there obviously at the event, and you. You support Dom a lot, and you do a bit of running yourself as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mustn't underestimate that. So on this particular race, then, what was your role, and had you been briefed as to what to say if he was acting a certain way, or did you play? Are you the, as you obviously know him very well, was it? Did you sort of play on what you know of his psychology to help him keep going, or how did it go?
To be honest, this time I think it was everything just went quite smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you did seem mentally positive pretty much the whole time. And nutrition-wise, we've learned from experience, I think. We've learned what works, learned what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So we took with us what we knew would be fine. And I've just learned over time what to kind of offer when, and to offer like a little selection to him, basically, when he comes back. And just having in mind, oh, he needs maybe 200 calories, for example, each lap to kind of keep going.
Oh, so you do get a little bit scientific with it then?
Yeah, so then I'll just have a little paper plate to the side and put on a few things that I think, oh, he might want this, he might want that. And then he has a choice for what he fancies at the time. And maybe he'll take something on in his pocket on the loop, and I know he's, you know, going to be fueled and carry on to the next lap.
Yeah, so I've heard stories that on some of these ultra runs, the support crews or whatever will actually, because there comes a point when the mental reasoning isn't as good, I presume. Is that, have there been points where you've had to like push food down his mouth practically, or tell him like you need to eat or anything like that?
Like before, not really this time, I would say. In previous Backyards, yes. Particularly the first one you did, and probably the one we did in America. But this time, no, you seemed able to eat. And And even when maybe you couldn't one loop, you didn't fancy it, it was fine because I knew you'd had enough, and then the next loop you would eat something. So it's fine. I think the only thing we kind of ran out of this time was drink selection, because it was a lot hotter than we thought, and had to go and refuel at a handy little coffee cart
and
get some nice soft drinks. But other than that, everything I think went pretty smoothly.
It did, really. Yeah.
Yeah. So what was your role apart from feeding?
Well, I got sent instructions every now and again via WhatsApp for shoe, sock, or clothing changes.
I wasn't any sock changes. I had the same socks the whole 30 hours.
Okay. Nice.
good socks.
Good old Injiji socks, toe socks.
And you just have to.
Oh, really? What?
Yeah.
Explain what they are.
So they're basically like gloves for your. Yeah, feet, really. Just individual
toes.
Yeah, toes.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Got you. I was imagining going just over the toe of toes.
No.
Okay,
but
supposed
to be good for stopping blisters.
And right, yeah.
I can't remember the last time I had a blister on a run now.
Brilliant. Just say the name again in case they want to sponsor the podcast.
In Gigi.
Gigi, yeah. Right, brilliant.
10%, cool. Please.
No sock changes. How many shorts and vest changes?
I actually don't know if I had any shorts change either. Oh, actually.
Maybe one?
Oh, no, yeah, actually, I did once. Yeah,
you must have some good anti-chafing going on.
I was going to say, that was the one thing from the March Backyard, wasn't it? It was like, I don't know, in these. So Suffolk, Christina was just awake the whole time.
I never
sleep. Right. Yes, just there preparing. But
the feet in itself,
yeah. She was crewing me along with a friend in March at a different backyard. and I had a bit of a chafing issue in the early hours, and that was the hour that Christina decided to go to sleep. So I came into camp a little bit grumpy with a chafing issue, and couldn't find the necessary...
No, you could find it, but you couldn't open it.
Yeah, okay.
What products? Feel free to mention products. We use Body Glide, Vaseline.
Squirrel's nut butter.
Yeah, this is... It's really... Yeah, Squirrel's nut butter is called, yeah.
Okay.
Which is...
Is that just for men?
It's for anybody who wants it.
Anyone who's nuts, not anyone with nuts.
They do a whole line of products. Toes as well.
I see.
It's for anyone. Yeah. It's an inclusive brand.
Yeah. I'm interested. What was the male-female split of the race?
I don't know, but I mean, it would have been a reasonable...
20, I imagine.
I'd tell you, I'd have said about two-thirds male to female.
Yeah.
But I don't really
Definite
know.
Male majority, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, what do we know how far the furthest female went?
Oh, she went really far.
Yeah,
she,
because I mean, there have been events, I mean, you'll know better than me, ultra events where women have won overall, haven't they?
Yeah,
she was fourth, right?
Yeah, so Claire Bamworth, the name, like French lady, she set a new French backyard ultra record by running it.
Right, well, how far did she go, do you know, roughly?
I want to say 60, 62, I've got in my head.
62 laps?
62, yeah. So 62 hours, which is going to be what?
260 miles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, I think she was struggling, I think, for quite a long time, but she had it in her head that she wanted a new French record.
Mm.
And she did it by 1 hour and then just said, yeah. But she's, apparently she won, I think, the winter spine race she won.
Okay.
So she's got like a really big ultra pedigree. So, yeah.
Amazing. And the male winner did how many?
80, I want to say 82.
Yeah, it was one more than last year or something, wasn't it? Is that right?
Or
last time?
Yeah, so 2 years ago, I think it was. It's John Stocker set the, what was then, world record of 81 at the same course. And then, so Oriel won it this year. He did more, I think he did 82, 83. He did just a bit more anyway.
And what do you think these guys have got then that sets them apart or just makes them be able to go that bit further? Is it more physical or mental, would you say, at that point?
At that point, it's definitely... Well, I'll say it's definitely mental, but obviously there's a...
You've still got to get around, haven't you?
Exactly, yeah. You could have anything that can go wrong physically. But
what sort of age are they, the guys who can...
I don't know, actually. I'd be... What, they'd be... No, around 5 to 10 years older than me, would you say? 10 years older than me?
Yeah, a bit of a mixture, but yeah. Something like that.
So for the benefit of the listeners, that makes them...
So I'd say they'd be like mid to late 40s.
Yeah.
Sorry, John, if he's listening. And
he's actually 25. Yeah. just looks old. Yeah.
Yeah, so they're generally I'd say you're probably peaking in your 40s.
Hmm.
For backyards in general.
Yeah. So when you and anyone is preparing for these and you're thinking... I want to go further. And you say you've got to have your why.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously you want to beat your previous time and that's motivation in itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
But is there also an element of saying, I want to see what breaks first or what makes me stop? Or
there is definitely like a certain sort of sadistic side like that, which is, I've had this problem in the past. So the first one I remember, it was my knee and nutrition just went out. Then one I did in the States was going quite well in ridiculously hot, humid temperatures. It was this weekend last year.
And a very technical course.
And it was, a technical hilly course.
Which obviously makes a massive difference.
Yeah, it does. And that's actually on again this weekend at Eau de Laz, backyard in America.
Where in America is that one?
Michigan.
Michigan, right.
Yeah. So good luck to the guys that are out there running that this weekend. There's a few friends we've got over there running it.
Brilliant. Yeah, because it is, I think we've touched on this last time, but it's a bit of a community, isn't it? Especially for you. You've connected with these people you were telling us last time.
Yeah.
And those relationships have stayed strong. No doubt you've made new ones as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All sorts of people you meet and keep these sort of bonds with. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
In that one last year, I got a stress fracture of my shin in that race. So that obviously went too far from that aspect. And then the Suffolk backyard last year, I didn't do so well in. I think I picked up some sort of infection, like bacteria in my stomach, about 2 or 3 hours in. So after only that far, I couldn't keep any solid food down. So that stopped quite early on.
Yeah.
Was just unfortunate, but that was a bit annoying because I was probably physically as fit as I've been at a backyard for that one. But you can't help things like that. And then, say, through time, you kind of... Now I know I've kind of gone through that experience. So it's, you know, you kind of learn and pick up on things and...
Yeah.
It helps you further on down the line.
So just being a devil's advocate for a bit. If I was to say, it sounds to me like these things do you more harm than good. how would you respond to that?
Well, the last two this year, I'd say, have been pretty much perfect, I'd say. They've gone well from a crewing perspective, from a nutrition, no injuries, touch wood. Good crowd, good people.
Yeah. And how do you think you benefit from it?
It's just a...
Just the buzz.
Really is just the buzz of like pushing yourself to see how far you can go. Because how often in, you know, day-to-day life or, you know, how often do you actually push yourself to a physical or a mental limit to, you know, a certain safety degree, obviously, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. Because there is this... I was going to come on to that. There is the... like the central governor theory that your brain will stop you before you do ultimate harm, which I'm not sure I agree with actually, because people still have heart attacks when they're exercising and all the rest of it. So the brain isn't that clever to stop them before they have those. But are there moments where you're consciously either even out loud or in your mind saying, I must carry on, I will not stop, or words to that effect?
Definitely this year on... The last loop I did, I think that's where I kind of...
Right.
That's where mentally I kind of stopped this year because, I mean, don't get me wrong, physically I don't think I could have done much more than 30 hours anyway.
Mm.
But I was kind of ready to throw in the towel around 28-ish, I would say anyway, 28 hours. But then for 30 hours, obviously 30 itself is quite a nice rounder number. That's just over 200K, just over 125 miles, or it is 125 miles. And when I started yard 30, I said to Christina, like, you can pack up our stuff, I'm done after this. And obviously in hindsight, you always say, oh, I could have done a bit more, I could have done a bit more. But realistically, you know, to be fair, I came in with, I think, about 3 minutes spare. So it is actually enough, more than enough time to turn around and go out again. But because I was mentally checked out, everything in my body just shut down and just said... No, like some of the guys there in camp.
What do you mean by that? I mean, that's obviously...
I think if mentally I was sort of focused to say to try and do... Say if 30 was 31 and not 30.
Yeah.
if you get me, I would have done 31, I'm sure.
Yeah, but you said everything in your body shut down. So how did that manifest itself?
As soon as I finished, I kind of just sat down on the floor and took off my timing chip and just said, you know, that's it.
Right.
I think laying on the floor and not focusing on... I wasn't sort of mentally wired of, right, I need to eat, I need to drink, I need to get ready for the next loop. I was just
surrendered at that point. Yeah.
I was like, I'm happy with what I've done, which is never a good thing to be happy with in the backyard while the race is...
Because you're a DNF.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody's a DNF, other than one. But, yeah, I think then some of the guys in camp did say to me, no, you can't quit and not go out. You have to actually time out on the course, which... Yeah, I agree with, and that's kind of the logic I said to the guys I couldn't really argue with, because that's exactly what I would do if I was in a crewing, supporting setting.
Yeah.
I'd say to people, come on, give it a go, which I did, but it was a bit of a frivolous attempt because I think I walked for about 2 minutes and then I just turned around and thought, no, I want to get home to my bed an hour sooner rather than try and do this.
Fair enough.
But like I say, I was physically done anyway.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have gone on for much longer, but could have maybe done... another one or two.
So if you had to do like a graph of your physical and mental distress as you went through the event, it obviously must have had a little peak after those few hours when Rachel talked you back into it. Then did it sort of stay pretty level and then just shoot up for the last one or two? Is that what I'm hearing?
I would say it probably shot up around about the 24 hours, so where you hit 100 miles. Because basically I was flying then. I think every loop I did... I was really consistent with my times, I feel, like both in March and this year, coming in between sort of 45 and 48 minutes, which I think maybe is too quick, but I felt really comfortable doing it at that pace.
Mm.
And I was running and chatting with some good people, like John Stocker, who's won it before a few times, I've shared a good few miles with. And when I came to finish the 100 miles loop, I did that with him, which was quite cool and quite a buzz. And like, you know, the next loop, going out and chatting to other people that I only speak to really when it comes to doing backyards. And you kind of don't keep track of numbers to a certain extent then. You're just chatting with people and thinking, you know, how far can I go?
Yeah.
And sort of sky's the limit until you hit that limit.
Yeah. Great. So you might, so that you were tired, you needed your bed, but were you immediately buzzing, or was it just like exhaustion, then it hits you the next day? What was the post-race sensation like?
So I'd say I was buzzing all the way up until probably the final stages of the hour 30.
Yeah.
Because I was really focused and determined for the hour 30 to say, I'm going to get this done on time. So I was kind of, I think I've got my music on then as well, and I just said, right, I'm going to go out and get this done.
Mm.
And then as soon as I'd finished and crossed the line, then it just sort of went down and I was depleted of all energy I had. Obviously I was really like still happy with what I did, and but I was then, yeah, I was just done.
Mm. So I want to get into now like the tips for people who are thinking of doing this maybe mm-hmm. for the first time or whatever. So we'll do it backwards. So what's okay. the important thing to do at the end of the race, do you think? Are there any sort of thing you must do's or definitely don't do? Is it a good idea to go and have a few pints, or is that like a really stupid thing to
do? You've got to get the calories back in. You're going to be calorie burning for a while, so you know, obviously don't have a few pints if you've got to drive yourself home, which I certainly wouldn't recommend doing anyway after doing 30 odd hours. Good crew there is key, like with Christina packed up everything from our setup while I was gone. So
we've jumped to the other end now. So when does the sort of packing and setting things out start? Obviously you want to do what all runners and triathletes should do and try out race kit well in advance. Do you start making decisions well before and saying, right, I must take that and set it to one side? How does it work?
To be fair, Christina does that, yeah. Yeah, we've got like our cupboard under the stairs is filled with kit.
Yeah, we've gained things over time, haven't we?
Yeah.
Good tent, good chairs,
right.
table mm-hmm. for all your supplies. Everything is pretty structured now. In our first backyard, it wasn't, but...
Yeah. Do most people have that sort of thing? Like,
if they're experienced and they have done few backyards in the past, yes, everyone has a similar setup. Mm-hmm. Some people have massage tables, massage guns, all the works. But some people are like us the first time with just a chair and a box.
Yeah.
And if they're a solo runner, sometimes that works, to be fair.
There are some people that do rock up and they've got no crew or anything, and they can do, like say Claire, the French lady, she didn't have a crew there. Obviously people chipped in and helped her as she went on, but she didn't have any crew there at all, which you did 62 hours, so.
And some people do, some people are really successful being solo backyarders. Amazing.
And what time of day did it start?
Midday.
Is that common or do they vary?
I think that's most common. I think Ode started a bit earlier, didn't it? Like 9 or 10, maybe.
Maybe.
But I think typically it's midday.
Yeah. So presumably you want to be there a lot before the start to get sorted out and...
Yeah, and even just sometimes to get a good pitch to be close to the starting line as well. Because, you know, a few steps can, in theory, make a difference the longer the race goes on. You know, if you've got to make the extra sort of 100 metres down to your 10 once you finish a loop.
Of course, yeah.
And obviously as you get nearer the end, you kind of...
That doesn't count as extra, does it? No.
No. As you get nearer the end, people obviously have chairs that they'll pull up right to the start line, and people will stand there with nutrition and stuff ready for people like Rachel, who I mentioned before. I think on her last loop, she came in with, what 20 seconds to spare or something?
Yeah. That was her first one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And she did 50, 60?
50 miles, yeah.
50 miles, yeah. Fantastic, yeah.
Really good going for your first ever, yeah.
So does that mean she went through the night or not?
Yes, so well, she...
Part of the night.
She'd have finished at midnight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So any tips for the night running, apart from obviously a good torch?
I actually like not having my head torch on, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, like for the walking sections, for the running sections, you don't want to, because there are a few tree roots and rabbit holes around. But it's quite nice running at night.
So when you say walking and running sections, what do you mean? Like, it's up to you, isn't it? Whether you're walking or running.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. There, because if you've got an hour, effectively, or 45, 50 minutes to do 4 miles, you dictate yourself when you want to run and walk, because, you know, most people, if you say run 4 miles, we'll do it in quite a quick pace.
Yeah.
Whereas here, there are certain sections of the course you kind of learn, right, I'm going to run this section, I'm going to walk this section.
Normally, would you walk the trickier bits?
Yeah, you would.
That's logical.
That's the logical thing. That's not actually what I did this year.
Right.
Silly. But just the first mile this year I really hated. And I ran the first mile every loop. And there's quite a few rabbit holes there, but it was so exposed and so hot, I just wanted it done and dusted.
Okay.
But in theory, you know, any hill you'll walk, anything that's technical you'll walk. Just because you've got so much time to do it in anyway, that there's no rush really.
Yeah.
You can even power walk a whole loop in the time. I've done that a few times myself in training.
Yeah.
Just walked 4 miles in 55, 56 minutes.
Yeah.
Just to know you can when you're really tired if you don't want to run.
Yeah, a change of muscular stress, mm-hmm. isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talked about, obviously, one pair of socks. What about shoes, the trainers? Did you change them a few times?
I changed them once, yeah, which I actually did again in the March one. I got a pair of Nike's Alpha Flies or Vapor Flies, I don't know.
Alpha Flies.
Which I didn't start off in, but I thought...
Carbon shoes have reached the ultra world as well, yeah.
The thing is, I thought, when I tried them, I thought, oh my God, these shoes are just like cheating. I can't believe anyone, you know, can... You know, you feel like you're just flying in those shoes. So I thought, I'll take them to backyard for, you know, psychology reasons. If I'm struggling, pop those on and it might help. And the one I did in March, the fastest loop I did was when I put those shoes on. It gave me a nice psychological boost. And I changed them into those again at Suffolk. I think maybe about 20 hours or so in.
Mm.
Just again for a kind of a bit of a lift and a bit of a boost. It was a dry course, so there's no problems with that.
Yeah. They don't have that long a life though, do they? You probably need a new pair. No. Yeah,
there's a few scuffs on those already. But yeah, I mean, I don't particularly run any races particularly fast these days anyway. So it's nice to have an extra bit of comfort rather than the speed benefits from them. Yeah,
definitely.
I won't start off a backyard in them, but I'll pop them on near the end.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about what you are going to move on to now then. So you obviously, that's like hopefully a big success in your mind, that what you've done there. Is that giving you like extra motivation, or do you feel like you've done this year?
To a certain degree, I feel like I'm done and I'm happy with how far I've done in it.
Yeah.
But also, like, they have there's a world championships every year. There's like a solo world championships, you know, where all the best in the world will go to Tennessee and run. And then every other year, there's a world championships they do where it will be like a team event. So it will be every country will have a backyard team based on the best from the previous year. So I'd like
from that same event. Is there like a selection committee or?
Basically, it's just a qualification based on either winning events within your country. So I think there's four qualification backyards in the UK. You either win one of those, or you're one of the next 10 or 11 people that have got the highest quantity of yards of loops for that year.
So
that
you're sort of a little way under that at the moment.
Yeah, I think realistically you're going to need sort of 36 plus to qualify for that next year. But it's a goal. It's good to have goals. So
yeah.
I think probably the 30 I did this year would have been enough last year maybe, or would have been close. So might as well have a goal.
And when you hear him say things like this, Christina, what do you think? Do you think, I want him to do it. I really want him to get those 36. Or do you think, oh my God, what is he talking about?
No, I wanted him to get it. I mean... Yeah, not going to lie, the first couple of backyards were probably a bit strange.
Yeah, well, for both of us.
but now we've got our rhythm, I think. Mm. So it's pretty, we know what we're doing, we know what to expect. And plan is to get at least 36 in March, right?
Well, realistically, it's going to be more as well. It is escalating quite a lot, that what's good now...
38?
Pick a number.
Realistically, I think you're probably going to need your 40s by the time October comes around next year, but...
All right, well, I best book another day off work.
Yeah, exactly. So, because it just goes through the roof. Like, the world record was set again this year. What, 102 hours?
Crazy.
Yeah, which is mileage-wise, what's that, like 400 and something? And that's going to be beaten again in October, no doubt, because October's the World Championships again.
Mm.
And this year, I think it's going to be the most stacked elite field they've ever had. That it's going to go, I think there's going to be a lot of people are going to go really far this year.
Crazy. Yeah, it just shows what the human body and mind is capable of, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah. I don't have a desire to test that. but obviously more and more people are.
You should one day.
It's addictive. So, Christina, what's your furthest you've done in a run, in an event?
I did
Virtual Ode to Snow, maybe.
I think the furthest I've ever run is when we did 55 kilometres when I did that Strive for 12 event.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So that was a similar format. It was a 5K course on the hour, every hour.
Okay.
But it was limited at 12 hours. And then the 12th hour, it was just a sprint race. So whoever was fastest won. But it was a small event. There was only, how many?
I think there's actually only 12.
There was 12 people.
Yeah.
But you did 50, so you did the 12th loop. You started the 12th
loop. I didn't know. Right.
You said you did 55K, so you did 11.
I stopped. I think I did.
You turned around on the penultimate loop or something, didn't you?
Yeah, by this point it was dark and I was the only woman left and it was just a few guys in this field.
Oh, so you won the women's race then?
Yeah, exactly. I did. I came first female on my first ever ultra. My claim to fame.
Nobody can take that away from you.
But that must give you, even though it's not, it's only a fraction of how far Dom went, it still gives you a sort of a little bit of insight into what's going on.
Yeah, and I mean, I did the backyard with you in America. Yeah. It was more of a for fun thing. I think I did 5 laps.
Yeah, but you just couldn't be bothered, could you?
Yeah, I don't have the mental side of it. I mean, I don't have the fitness at the same level either, but I definitely don't have the mental side. For me, it's always a question of why am I doing this? And then I decide
that's what
to stop.
I can ask. Can you understand the motivation that Dom has and others? Or do you just think, it's fair, he's got it, I don't get it, but I'll support it anyway?
I get it to a point. I get it to probably about 24, around this kind of time. I think once the second night comes along, I literally cannot comprehend how people do that without sleep.
Yeah.
And I question the negative impact it might have on their brain. But I can see, and I do support the people that are there. I will them to carry on. And it is a bit strange because there's part of you that thinks, oh, they might injure themselves, or maybe they want to stop. But you try and encourage them to carry on anyway. Mm. You just kind of get wrapped up in it. So.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's a really good point. You do just get wrapped up in it. And you just want to see other people excel.
Yeah, because you don't want them to have regret. I think that's the thing. You think if you in any way influence them to stop, they'll have regret and think, oh, I could have gone more. So you try, you do everything. You give people food, drink, a seat, right by the start, whatever it is, to try and support them to carry on.
Yeah.
Just so they've got the option to carry on if they want to. And then help them if they collapse on the floor afterwards.
I just wanted to pick up on that as well. When Christina then said about sleep on the second night, well, for Suffolk this year, the guy, Aurel, that ended up winning it, I think it was on the last day, he actually fell asleep on the course. On the course. When there was only, I think, 3 other people left. And the only reason he didn't time out is because one of the other runners woke him up as we went past. And then he obviously went on to win the race.
Yeah.
Even, things like that. And it's a common story when you go really far that people say that they don't realise what they're doing when they're actually out there running. Because they've been going for so long.
Yeah.
But that's obviously a very select few that get to that far.
And as you're saying, it shows the camaraderie as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Would you say, for both of you, this question, would you say there's anything about people who do it or who do well that links them in terms of personality type or physical type or anything that they have in common, or they're just really different people who just happen to do this?
I'd say personality-wise, they always seem to be really nice people.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I haven't met anyone I can think of that's, I would say, oh, I didn't really like them.
So no posers?
No.
No people say, I'm the best, don't talk to me.
No, I think...
Christina's not quite so sure.
No, I think really, it is that, basically if you're a nice person, and a lot of nice people we've met there running them, that's I'd say the main...
Yeah, I agree.
The common factor amongst all the people I've met there, really.
I mean, with you, I would just say, you have quite an addictive personality.
Oh, for sure.
And I think that's probably a common theme. Not with all of them, but I think everyone's got some, I don't know, probably some interesting story that's led them to ultra running, or has just kind of got an addictive personality like you, where it's just the repetitive nature of going again and challenging yourself to do more next time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, but all nice people. So if the first timer rocks up, they're going to be welcomed.
Oh, for sure.
They're
going to
be advised and kicked if they fall asleep on the course.
So look at us with Sean last year.
Oh yeah,
we did the world. Well, we were crewing at the World Championships, and we met a friend, Sean, who we didn't know before.
No,
and he didn't have a crew. He was one of these people with small tent, small chair, very uncomfortable chair, box. Done really well in backyards before.
Was that to bury him in afterwards?
No. He's done really well before in backyards, like very, very good runner. And he didn't have a crew, so we just sort of adopted him. Oh.
Sean the sheep.
Yeah, we just sort of adopted him and said, you know, do you need any help with this? Do you need any help with that? And people are a bit resistant at first because they don't want to bother you. But then eventually, when they keep going, they realise, okay, actually, yeah, will you fill this water bottle up for me? Or will you get me some hot soup or something? Yeah. Yeah. Anything you can do to sort of help them out, or give them a blanket when it's cold, or whatever.
And that's experience and like example setting by, that's Sarah and Andrew all over, right? That sort of thing. Like what they've done for us and told us about before. And
I suppose that's what gives you stuff to talk about as you go around as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, all these different ways to help each other and stories.
Yeah, yeah, conversations you have when you're out running there yourself as well.
And you want to talk because the more you talk, the quicker the time goes, presumably.
Yeah, well, and you're not focused on how much this or that hurts as well. And you're not thinking about how many hours have I done and how many hours are left. You just think, you know, just out on a stroll with a friend and having a chat about, well, I can't even remember.
Doesn't matter, does it? As long as it's something,
Yeah.
So you've got these lofty ambitions, but you do occasionally do a sprint, like a 50-mile race, isn't it? I think that's your that's your next thing, isn't it? So just tell us about what other events you've got.
That definitely won't be a sprint.
Relatively speaking.
So Lakeland 50, actually a week on Saturday, 50 miles across the Lake District, which should be good fun, because I've actually never been to the Lake District before. Particularly for a trail runner.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not there. I'm not going at all focused on times. I just kind of want to enjoy the experience and kind of see how that puts me in a position to potentially do another race, using that almost as a training run myself.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll see.
You're being coy there.
Another race I did last year that I DNF'd in the States. I'm kind of doing this Lakeland Lake District 50 miler as a bit of a training exercise to see how I'd be for doing that in September.
Yeah, and the altitude on this, the elevation gain on this Lakeland is, you're telling me?
I think it's like 9,500 feet.
All right,
Yeah.
Not easy to train for in Cambridge, is it?
No. We've got a little hill by the monument. That's about it. I think I can do about 1,000 feet there in about 6 miles, which...
Okay.
You know, it's not ideal for training, but...
Yeah.
Time on feet, I think, is a key thing, really, which I've got a lot of practice on. And, you know, training for ultras and training for backyards around sort of like a work life isn't easy, but...
Mm. I mean, you can do Royston. There are places you can find steep hills if you want them. They're just short.
I did the Royston one recently, actually. I just did a half marathon in, like, Thurfield, just going up and down.
Yeah.
Which, again, is actually good mental training as well as physical. You know, just going up and down the same... you know, quarter mile stretch for 3 hours.
Mm. Yeah. And so on a weekly basis, then you've got, obviously now you're hopefully tapering a little bit towards this 50, you're easing off a tiny bit, or do you go right to the 2 days before you ease off?
Well, I was out with you last night and did a run after the speed session last night. But typically I will taper off a bit. Normally what I'll do is 4 weeks before a big ultra, I'll try to do 60 odd miles in the week. And then 3 weeks before, I try and do 100 miles, and then I will drop it down to do sort of 20, 30 miles the 2 weeks before.
Okay, yeah, sounds good.
Just keep the legs ticking over and kind of try and go out 2 or 3 times a day often when I'm building up the miles. Because again, you're running on tired legs, and when you don't want to, you know, first thing in the morning or as soon as you finish work, they're kind of good times to go out.
Yeah. And I think since last time we talked, you've done a few other things, haven't you? So I remember one in particular, you did this thing where you added a mile for each day of the month.
Oh yeah, that was last year, yeah.
So yeah. Can you explain what that was again? Yeah, that sounds almost achievable till you get to the end.
But again, it's actually good training. Yeah, that's like it's an accumulator challenge. So you would do, it's in January, you'd do it typically. You'd do a mile for every day of the, well, every calendar date of the month. So you do 1 mile on the first, 2 miles on the second.
Were you allowed to bank miles in advance or not?
Well,
did 5 on the second, could you then have the third off?
Nah, no, I wouldn't. I don't think that's allowed.
No.
It's like a...
No cheating.
No. So you could either try and do the amount of miles in the day, which is what I did, not just in one activity, but throughout the day. Or there's the more hardcore version where it is like a frozen accumulator where you would do it all in one activity.
All right.
Whereas for me, I thought, no, I'll just try and get it done every day. So I'll go out for a walk with the dog in the morning, then go out again at lunchtime.
And it was miles, not Ks.
Miles I did, yeah.
So, you know, just to explain the obvious, when you get to 26, you're doing a marathon, and then you've got to do 1 mile more than marathon the next day, and 2 miles more, and so on. So you're basically doing six, and it was it 3rd January, so it's 31 days.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's over a marathon a day for the last 6 days with everything else before. Yeah.
Which is very good training as well.
Well, yeah.
A lot of time.
You survive it, yeah.
Yeah. Which had put me in quite a good stead for that year, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But physically then I was fitter than I am now, again, for sure.
That's interesting. How long, I mean, obviously it's, some part probably goes on forever, but how long do you think you feel noticeable benefit from sort of a massive either training block or event? Like, say you did your backyard ultra, that was how long ago now? The Suffolk one?
June.
So only a month ago, sort of.
It's be
a bit over a month.
About 7 months ago, because it was like the first weekend of 7 weeks ago. Sorry,
right, yeah.
It's the first weekend of June. So yeah.
Okay, and would you say you're still benefiting from that in terms of strength, resilience, and so on? I would say, scientists, I'm sure, would say you probably are, because the adaptation process, some of it doesn't even finish till about 6 weeks after. So you probably.
I don't know. If anything, I would say I've probably not recovered as well as I probably should have done, because I went straight into doing.
That's probably the thing.
Yeah. Like nothing crazy, but you know, I maybe shouldn't have done like that flaming June with you, which wasn't, you know, still only 10K, but I probably shouldn't have done that so soon afterwards.
Yeah.
No, you just didn't rest basically.
Yeah.
Do you feel that, is there a day when you suddenly think, oh, I'm light on my feet again? Or does that, you never get that?
To be fair, that does happen, yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes you want to go out and try, you know, like a faster park run or
Yeah. Does it take you by surprise sometimes where you think, oh, I'm supposed to be tired, but today I actually feel good?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like more, I think we spoke about it before, like the Kingston Handicap races.
Yeah.
Quite often for them, like Rob will message out and I'll say, yeah, I'll come along, and you know, you can either race it or not race it. Mm. And I'll always just say, you know, let's see how it goes, and I'll trust what his timing system is, and because I know when I get there, I'm kind of competitive and you have a bit of adrenaline going and end up looking at it afterwards going, oh, physically I didn't think I was that fit today, but actually my pace is pretty good. Which again is a mindset thing.
Yeah. Excellent. Right, so we'll start to sort of bring it towards close. Anything that I haven't asked you about that you've done since we last met that you want to make sure you mention? Would you say your last event, this Suffolk Backyard Ultra, is the one you're most proud of all the ultras you've done?
I don't know. I think I'm kind of really proud of the first 100 miler I did, like Thames Bath. That was really, that just was like a really good experience and really good event. I'm really proud of that. But yeah, I think for distance and for like, you know, the people that were there, yeah, I can't really argue with like Suffolk and the Rasselbock one as well. We did in March. That was a really good one with a lot of good people. And yeah, like they're the ones where I really felt like I kind of hit my limit for that race.
Yeah,
like rather not injury or a bug. It was more that's my sort of mental / physical limit for that race, I think.
Because that's probably how you measure success, isn't
it?
Because you're not measuring it in terms of the pace usually, are you? Especially if it's a crazy course or it's the old backyard format, you're not really measuring it against other people because they could have been on a great day or a bad day. It doesn't mean you're a better or worse athlete than them, does it? It's just what happened on that day. So it isn't that sort of thing that gives you the, it's whether you gave your best on that day and were able to run to your potential. Yeah.
Well, even if you look at Suffolk for me last year, I stopped at 11, 12 hours, which for me, like I'm not very happy with, but in the circumstances, I definitely couldn't have done any more, just because I was completely suffering. Physically spent, like being sick on the course, not being able to eat anything. Like, even though that was like my worst performance at a backyard, there's still an element of me that's quite, you know, proud of the fact of how far I went considering the circumstances. That was probably tougher than some other races I've done where I've, you know, done quite well in them. Yeah. Like from a, you know, a finishing results point of view.
And perhaps last question then for both of you. If you were organising your own event, you wanted it to be the best ultra run in the world, what would it be? Would it be a backyard? Would it be something else? And what elements would it have that maybe you haven't seen in any other races? Would there be something like...
We'll go ladies first.
I would just say that I would do backyard just because it's a easier format for crew from having one location and having a bit more of like a festival vibe about it than a point-to-point race.
Yeah.
And when we did the one in the Oud-Tolaz in Michigan, that has three different start locations. And they're all, so you go through different crew areas on the course, which makes it a bit more fun.
Yeah.
And they have different things like games, music. Games, so it's definitely more of a atmosphere.
Have there been any ultra races where there's actually been a crowd, what you could call a crowd, like where you've been cheered to the finish by
yeah,
a ticker tape finish?
I wouldn't say a ticker tape finish, no, but like Thames Path. I think, I don't know, speaking with somebody...
There's people on the route, yeah.
Yeah, like, you'll see people on the route, and we're running through, I think it's like Reading or somewhere, we're running through, like, sort of 2 a.m. on a on a Sunday, and obviously you get people coming out of the clubs and the bars as you're running through, and you're looking worse for wear than they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're sort of like, way, like, cheering along as you're going along. That's, you know... But you do get, obviously, quite a few people that are aware of the event's on and will come down to cheer and support.
Yeah, I like what you said about the sort of festival idea, because maybe you could even have an ultra run in a festival, going round and round the perimeter or something. Well, that would be good, wouldn't it?
I've said that for my ideal race, there's a backyard in Estonia called the Heavy Metal Backyard.
Oh, really? This is down your street. Yeah.
Which, for me, would be perfect if you had a festival setting where you've just got a band that are playing in the middle of the course while you're running around it.
Or with a brewery... One end.
Okay.
It's a bit too tempting to finish early, though, isn't it?
Yeah. You're only allowed access when you finish.
Yeah, you have to. You can only get a beer for every 20 loops or something.
Yeah.
That's a good incentive.
Yeah. Oh, Britt, so yours would be at this festival in Estonia, or would you like create your own festival in Cambridge?
I think like a backyard format, or where it's like looped courses aren't for everybody, I know, but I think from bringing people together and having a fun atmosphere, it's the best. For you've got a centralized point where you can see, you know, your runner or runners every hour or whatever.
Some races reverse the direction, don't they, or not? Has that never happened?
I mean not at a race I've been to. No, it doesn't mean they don't do it.
Does that though?
Oh yeah, Barclay Marathons does. Yeah,
yeah, I thought yeah, so. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah, good show.
Yeah,
but that's proper elite, isn't it? That but yeah,
I'm just wondering if that would make it mentally a bit easier if you were going one way, one loop, and then...
Well, at backyards, actually, in some, they have a different loop for day and night. They would have, like, a trail loop in the day and then a road loop at night, which, again, does actually give you something else to look forward to think, oh, I've only got to put up this for 12 hours and it changes to this again.
Yeah.
Which has only been on one that I've done. But, yeah, that was quite good, to be fair.
Yeah. So was it you who talked Rachel into doing the ultra, or did she just have that of her own? Have you managed to ever persuade anyone?
I think Dom's persuaded most people.
Has he recruited?
It's what you call an enabler.
Yeah, that's yeah, I've heard that before.
Yeah, so you obviously sell it well then.
But I'll say about my experiences, and then for the most part people will come along and they'll agree with it, I think, when they're there themselves. I know, like, particularly like Rachel was kind of thinking afterwards, oh God, you know, that was awful. And then I think the next day she was like, but I'm already thinking about next year.
Addictive personality.
Yeah.
So for people who obviously are listening to this, maybe they're thinking they want to give it a go, the backyard, where are the places to go to get the best information apart from listening to this podcast? What can they do to really to understand and come make sure they don't make any errors when they turn up on the start line? Obviously they've got to enter the race, which... You know, they can find out about just by Googling the race, probably. But
yeah.
Are there any particularly good sources for training advice, for just how to crew, for, or is it just word of mouth?
Well, I'd say if you're going online, there's like the Backyard has its own website that hosts and shows all the races in your country, which is quite good. And then in terms of content, there's a mate called Pato has his own podcast, Backyard Ultra podcast, he does as well.
Cool.
Is that
a British one?
It's Australian. Actually. A podcast of his I listened to earlier this year, he had like a nutrition expert on it.
Yeah.
Helped me quite a lot for my backyard in March. He's had like the recent world record holder was on there as well. Mm. He's got a lot of different variety of guests on there that give a lot of good advice.
Mm.
He had the world record holder on earlier on this year before the world record was set with his wife who was crewing him. So that gives a good insight into that as well.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I think just watching documentaries.
Oh, okay.
I mean, this whole thing started with watching the Barclay Marathons documentary.
Yeah. I think that's true Netflix. For a lot of people, isn't it? Yeah.
And then I think you pick up a few bits from that, but otherwise, yeah, just word of mouth, like friends that we know that have done it, that we've got advice from, and then just experiencing it and seeing what people do and don't do.
So would you advise maybe going to crew before you do the actual race? Would that be a good... Depends. Or do you think that would put you off?
I'd say going along to experience the atmosphere is a good thing.
Yeah, if you've got a friend that's doing it, go along, see what the deal is, yeah.
Like a few people have just popped along for a few hours, or to say they're only coming for a few hours. Like Shefki last year, a friend he used to work with came along just to watch for a few hours and ended up coming back again in the evening and staying pretty much through till the morning, like himself.
He left at 6 a.m, I think.
Yeah.
It was just addictive.
Yeah.
Because obviously you don't have to come pay to spectate.
No.
But the entry fees, I imagine, are quite high, are they?
About £100 or so.
Okay, which is probably a lot in running terms, but not in triathlon terms for people these days. So,
I've got no idea the price of
triathlon. I don't think that will shock people to hear that.
No.
I mean, it's a long event, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's
it. I mean, if you put that as pounds per hour in your case...
Yeah,
hardly anything, is it?
Pounds per mile, you can be getting
less
than a quid for a mile, and obviously you get the organisers as well when they come to organising it, like Lindley for the Suffolk. He doesn't know when the race is going to end, so obviously you need to, you could pay for a race that's going to end on the Sunday or it could end on the Wednesday. They've obviously got the course and facilities and everything to consider as well.
Sure. Brilliant. Right, well, we'll bring it to a close there unless you can think of anything else. If people want to get in touch with you or follow you, as they say these days, what's your handle these days? where do we go to find out what Dom's up to and how he's done in his 50 mile Lake District event next week?
That's pressure now. just Dom Halbert on Strava and Instagram.
Cool.
Just running and beer, that's it.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned it last time, but Dom's got quite a distinctive look. He's usually wearing very colourful things when he's running, from the socks upwards.
Yeah.
He's got his beard and semi-shaved head this year.
Yeah,
Needs a trim.
He does need a trim, yeah.
Yeah, and obviously he'll have lovely Christina with him and maybe a little dog as well.
Yeah, sometimes.
Does she come sometimes?
Yeah, she comes to the one in March, the Rasselbach backyard.
Mm.
She came with us last year and she'll come with us again. So she keeps me company.
Mm. She's done a few backyard loops in training.
Yeah.
It's quite a good excuse to go for a slow run as well. So I'll take the dog with me.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, thanks ever so much for chatting to us again. And we'll be following your progress.
thanks very much. Cheers, Ben. Myself, Gabby Teetree, in them speeches, so without self-confidence, you to twice defeated. Believe me, Rastafari, now we had pan nobody for tell me some green. Now we had pan nobody for open up your gate. Have to believe in myself, have to believe in myself. Now we had pan nobody for give me motivation. Well, I hope you enjoyed that great chat there with Dom and his wife Christina, and you know what to do now if you fancy taking up some ultra running, and in particular the challenge of a backyard ultra. Please follow us on Facebook, on Instagram, and rate us, subscribe, all the usual things. And as you can see, it's a new series. I'm back with more episodes very, very soon. Till then, keep enduring.
navigate. Half a believe in myself. Half a believe in myself. Now we help on nobody, forgive my motivation. Me I go make it out this sticky situation. Half a believe in myself. Half a believe in myself. Now I try them I do me have my own mission. Now we help on a soul, me alone and me done. From here the name Kabaka, you know say man a king in a earth. Me know my worth as a proud African. I just a paralyze me. For know myself and in a school they never teach me. For know my wealth and this a journey never easy. Still me show my strength. So even though my slim I lift the weight over the bench. Now wait for nobody for tell me say my great. Now wait for nobody for open up your gate. Half a believe in myself. Half a believe in myself. Now wait for nobody for give me motivation. Me I go make it out this sticky situation. Half a believe in myself. Half a believe in myself, yeah, yeah, yeah.